The election and the economy. That's our topic during this segment of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Steve Moore. Steve Moore is FreedomWorks senior economic contributor and Trump's economic advisor. He's also co-author with Kathleen Hartnett White of a new book called Fueling Freedom, Exposing the Mad War on Energy. Steve, welcome back to the program.
A pleasure to be with you.
All right, great. Let's talk about the election and the economy, and maybe we'll begin with Obamacare.
Well, you know, the news has come out now that Obamacare is spiraling out of control in terms of prices. We've seen that the numbers that came out of the government this week, 22% average premium increases. You know, we got 2% inflation and 22% increases in health care costs. I mean, that's extraordinary. And this comes on double-digit increases last year. And, you know, Obamacare is quite simply is not saving families $2,500 a year. It's actually costing families $1,000 more. By the way, you're going to see these costs continue to accelerate as more and more people drop out of the insurance market. It's only going to be sick people that are expensive to cover that are going to be in the market. And so the costs, I think, are going to go up even further next year if Obamacare is still around.
Hmm. All right, good. You've been asked by numerous reporters, I understand, do you still support Donald Trump? Tell us about that and your answer.
Oh, well, that's an easy question. Of course, I still support Donald Trump. By the way, I do not support a lot of the things that he said. I'm as offended as anyone is about some of the comments he's made and some of the lewd behavior. But Hillary Clinton, I mean, my gosh, we're finding out, new details of her corrupt and even potentially criminal behavior day after day. It's just dripping out. And we have basically a womanizer running for president against a serial liar.
Yeah.
And I think given that they're both people, we have serious character flaws. You have to look at the record and the kinds of ideas these candidates have. And when it comes to the economy, when it comes to protecting the Constitution, when it comes to the Supreme Court, all these reasons are major reasons why obviously Donald Trump is my choice. And again, I say that as someone who's as troubled as anyone by some of the things that he has said. But when you look at the fact that he's a businessman, not a career politician, and that he wants to cut taxes, does not raise them, those are strong reasons for me to back Donald Trump unqualified.
I look at it this way, ill-mannered or illegal. That's our choice in this election.
That's a good way to put it. I mean, that's kind of how I was saying it, too. I mean, Hillary, I don't know if she's done anything criminal, but she certainly, her whole career has been to straddle that line. She's always been one half step ahead of the law. The latest as we talk, now we understand the FBI is reinvestigating the email scandal because it looks like it's a much deeper scandal than Hillary admitted when it first came out. She's done everything, by the way, possible to obstruct that investigation. So, that's not something innocent people do. they usually cooperate with the investigators, and all of her people have taken the Fifth Amendment. They've clammed up, and I think there's something deep there. So those are things, look, your vote is your, in that matter, personal conscience. For me, I want to see this economy growing again. I want to get jobs back. I want to see incomes rising again. I think Hillary's going to give us four more years of what we've just had, whereas we need, I think, a dramatic shift in direction.
Now, Steve, you and I are about the same age. I think you're a couple years younger than me. But when I was growing up, I mean, usually you in your 20s, you graduate from college, you find a wife, and then you move out of the house, and then you establish a livelihood, and you get paid little at first, but you build up something. Now you have all these millions and millions of young people. They're graduating from college. A lot of them are saddled with college debt. And they can't seem to find good jobs, and they're living in their, parents' homes, their parents' basements. It's just incredible. It's like, what is happening to this country?
Well, tell me about it. I mean, I have one of those millennials in my basement right now. He's a good kid. I mean, he's 23 years old. He finally has a job, but it's not a job that pays enough for him to, to stake it out on his own. So he is in my basement. And I know so many, friends and neighbors who have the same situation. It's a difficult job market out there. I mean, we're not, look, if you want to work at a Wendy's or McDonald's or Walmart, you can find a job easily. But the good kind of jobs that we used to create are leaving. I mean, we've lost 1.5 million manufacturing jobs, 1.5 million manufacturing jobs in just the last 8 years. You know, we can't continue to do this. We've got to make things in America again. And, you know, when Donald Trump says we're going to make America great again, you know, I always tell him, Donald, to make America great, as you know, we have to make things in America again. And I think we will. He's a very pro, you know, energy, pro manufacturing, pro steel production. Let's get back to those days where we're, you know, producing steel, not buying it from the Chinese and the Mexicans.
You had an interesting line, you were quoting somebody else, but in your book called Fueling Freedom, where it was something like this: you need steel to make windmills, but
that's
you can't
right.
use windmills to make steel.
That's right. I mean, you're not, if you're, we have a $18 trillion industrial economy in this country where we do produce cars and we still do produce steel and we produce chemicals and we produce, you know, computers and software and technology. That all requires energy. And there's just no way, even though Hillary Clinton thinks somehow we're going to be able to do this, that we're going to be able to, provide enough electric power for an $18 trillion economy with windmills and solar panels. I mean, that's just ridiculous. We only get 4% of our electric power today from, from those sources. We get most of our energy, and electric power from, coal and natural gas and nuclear power. And those are the kinds of sources of energy that we need to be using. They're cheap and they're abundant and they're reliable. So that's a big deal. And I think if we get the energy story right and produce our vast amounts of energy in this country, I really believe that within 4 or 5 years, we can become, the Saudi Arabia of energy production. We can be producing and selling more energy across the world than any other country. And that puts us in a strong economic and security position if we do that.
And women can drive here, too, no less. Just kidding.
Exactly. So, what sense does it make, to stop producing oil and gas and coal here? When we do that, all we do is benefit the Iranians and the Russians and OPEC and the Saudi Arabian, the countries that have been, financing terrorism and who hate us. So, my feeling is every time we produce a barrel of oil here in the United States, that one fewer, barrel that we have to buy from OPEC and countries that are hostile to us.
It's interesting. I was looking at the Electoral College map the other day, and I saw West Virginia, and they put it solidly in the
Clinton.
Yeah.
And that used to be a Democratic state, but people in West Virginia have seen firsthand what these radical environmentalists are trying to do to this country. And they, if they have their way, we are going to see jobs disappear. I mean, they've already destroyed our coal industry. And I live in Virginia. It's heartbreaking to see what these, these pro working class Democrats in Congress have done to the working class Americans, where they put them out of jobs and unemployment lines. And now they're going to do that to the oil and gas industry. I mean, that's what they say is next, and that's 6 million Americans who work in oil and gas. I mean, that these people are quite dangerous.
But it isn't even just the people whose jobs would be at risk if they did go after coal, oil, gas, and oil produced here in America. As you point out in your book, 96% or so of our energy comes from these
yep.
sources, not from the wind. Despite all the millions of dollars in subsidy or billions in subsidies for these green sources, it's just not there yet by any means.
You got that right. So we now produce, about, as you said, 95% of our electricity. Well, look, I'll give you the statistics. I mean, 35% or so of our electric production comes from coal, and about another 35% comes from natural gas. So that's 70% right there. And then we get, another 10 or 15% from nuclear power, and then, about 5 or 6% from hydropower, which, by the way, the left hates hydropower, too, because they don't like dams. And we only get a small percentage from wind and solar. And this idea, Hillary has this idea where federal government is going to spend $200 billion to purchase 500 million solar panels. I mean, where are they going to put them? I mean, there's only 300 million people in this country, so this would be the biggest corporate welfare giveaway to.
Wow.
Why don't they just write a check to Elon Musk, who runs Solar City? He's already a billionaire. Let's write him another $10 billion check. I mean, we should let the free market decide what kind of energy we use, whether that's natural gas or coal. I'm not against wind or solar. I just want them not to get massive amounts of taxpayer subsidies.
There was a statement you made in the press that you got a lot of trouble for from liberals, but you still defend it. It was along the lines of, we have infinite amounts of oil in this country.
Practically. I mean, for all practical purposes, we have 500 years worth of coal. We have about 200 years worth of oil. We have about the same amount of natural gas, and that's with existing technologies. So the
wow.
technologies always get better. I mean, look at what's happened with fracking and horizontal drilling in the shale oil and gas revolution has almost doubled how much oil and gas we have almost overnight. So we're going to see those kinds of technical breakthroughs continue. Now, look, let's say we have 200 years worth of oil. Maybe 200 years from now, as we're running short, we can start using, solar power. But, you know, we're still many, many, many years, if not decades away from having solar power be a viable form of reliable energy. So let's use what we've got now. And as the technology improves, we'll find other sources of energy, maybe in the year 2300.
All right. Let me ask you a question. I read that supposedly in Oklahoma, where they've had a lot of earthquakes recently, some people have tried to make the link between the fracking and those earthquakes, or some of the things that they're doing for oil production in Oklahoma and causing those earthquakes. But I don't know. Your thoughts?
Yeah, the truth is I don't know either. I mean, I'm not a geologist. It is a troubling thing. There have been more, some signs of, they're not major earthquakes. They're, trembles. But we have to make sure if as we do this drilling and we use fracking and other, devices to get at the shale oil and gas, that we are doing it in a way that is environmentally responsible, number one, and doing it in a way that's not going to damage, property. So it's something we certainly need to keep an eye on. I wouldn't deny that, but it's not a reason to shut down our oil and gas production.
One of the last things you say in your book, again, the book is called Fueling Freedom, you say we need to abolish the Department of Energy, the U.S. Department of Energy. Your thoughts?
I mean, the Department of Energy has done nothing over the last, remember that was started by Jimmy Carter some 30 or 40 years ago, and its objective was to try to essentially all it's done is make energy more expensive. So, why do we need these massive subsidies to to the various energy companies, whether it's oil and gas or coal or solar or wind or whatever? I mean, why can't we just have a free market in energy? And by the way, I mentioned oil and gas. They do get some subsidies, but they get, 1/100th of the subsidies, that solar and wind power get. We would not have a solar and wind power industry today if it were not for massive billions of dollars that we throw at that industry.
Hmm. How do the poor fare either way when it comes to this whole issue of energy? I mean, this is an important question because a lot of times those who are, touting green energy, they say, oh, we need to help the poor and so forth. And your book points out, hey, you want to help the poor? You let them, have access to this fuel energy.
Yeah, you better believe it. And, I really believe that if we do this right, we will have abundant energy, and as energy becomes more abundant, as the technologies continue to improve, that lowers the cost, right? So, the biggest beneficiaries of fracking and horizontal drilling and the shale oil and gas revolution have been poor people, because it makes driving their cars and heating their homes and air conditioning their homes and using electric power less expensive. And by the way, everything that we have, the telephone I'm speaking into, the microphone you're speaking into, the chair you're sitting in, the breakfast we had this morning, all of those are derivative of cheap and abundant energy. So we want to, the people who benefit the most from a very reasonable price of energy are the lowest income people. And when you make energy more expensive, that's like a regressive tax on the poorest people among us.
All right. Now, when we talk about the economy in general, in this economy, under this president, there's something like 93 million or so Americans, adults, who are not in the labor force. Is that counting all the retired people as well, or is that talking about people who could be working otherwise?
That's including everyone over the age of 16. Now, a lot of those people are, over the age of 65, but what's happening is that the biggest decline in the labor force actually has been among younger people. So, in fact, older people are more likely to be working and younger people are less likely to be working. That's a bad thing, because we want people to begin working at a reasonably young age, because when you start working at a young age, your lifetime earnings go up So that's a paradox that we have. And by the way, when I'm talking about young people, I'm talking about people under the age of 30. I'm not talking about teenagers.
Wow.
We've seen a big decline. Now, one of the dumb things to do now would be to raise the minimum wage, because if you do that, you're going to price even more young people out of the workforce. My first job was working outside of the town we grew up in, in northern Chicago. And I was working for $2.15 an hour in a little warehouse. But that was one of the most important jobs I had. You learn a lot on your first job. So we got to get people back working. And that means do it through welfare reform and do it through, raising more jobs so that people can really get into the workforce and get the skills they need to become wealthier.
Steve Moore, thank you so much for being with us. FreedomWorks.org or also FuelingFreedomProject.com has direct information about that book, Fueling Freedom. Always a pleasure, Steve. Thanks so much for being with us. Okay, bye-bye now.
Happy to be with you.
Okay, bye-bye.